Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
And our week after Christmas, right before New Year's, we're going to be talking about Django Unchained, Les Miserables, and Parental Guidance, plus some DVDs and Blu-rays. Did you like that?
I like
pronounced
that.
It in
great.
The proper French.
That was the proper French.
The proper French is Les Miserables and then anything else.
Okay.
Les Miserables.
See, now if you can see the facial expressions that Kevin is making while he's doing that. That makes it even better.
We should start videotaping this.
I'm going to make you say Les Miserables all day today.
I will.
Okay.
I will. Anyways, before we move into these reviews and that sort of thing, let's talk about the box office. It's kind of weird talking about the box office now because we're sort of in this...
Yeah.
There's sort of this, like, two-week flow of box office because we had box office from last week and then it's... bleeds into Christmas Day, and then it bleeds into the next week. So you have movies like Les Mis and Django Unchained and Parental Guidance.
Mentioned what about that Django? Before. How do you say that?
Django. The D is silent. Come
I
on.
Know.
I did have radio hosts asking me, they go, so about this Django? And I'm like, no.
No.
These movies are going to have a 6-day opening weekend. So we're not even going to kind of like talk about that right now. Let's just talk about that 3-day spread from last weekend.
Yep.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We were both correct in picking the number one movie.
Well, we get one thing.
But we were not as correct in picking the number one movie's box office.
A little bit off.
You said $50 million for The Hobbit. I said $45 million. It actually came in the high 30s. And, of course, it's going to bleed through. I mean, we're a little closer when you factor in the Christmas.
There you go.
The Christmas.
We were totally right on.
We were totally
somehow
right on with the Christmas.
After
rush.
Some days.
Yeah. But, yeah, Hobbit did come in number one. And then Jack Reacher, This Is 40, and The Guilt Trip all underperformed. Not a big surprise to anyone in this room.
Mm-mm.
Because Jack Reacher... You know, mid to high teens,
wah.
This Is 40, low teens, Guilt Trip, wow. Guilt Trip opened, even if you factor in its Wednesday and Thursday opening from the previous week, you're still well under $10 million. So those movies, none of them did very well.
It's really too bad.
But we kind of saw that coming.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, wait, why was it too bad? For which movie?
Well, you know, The Guilt Trip. It's a cute movie.
It is a cute movie.
But, you know, Christmas.
It underperformed more than the other movies underperformed.
There you go.
And it was right around what Monsters, Inc. in 3D, which I think these 3D re-releases, they're a novelty early on. And I know they're just cranking out the Pixar ones just to get them in the library.
Well, yeah. And now you've got Monsters University coming out next year. Yeah. So you want to see it now and get caught up. And
It's going to be one of those that's going to close around 30 to 40, which is what all these 3D re-releases. That's kind of
isn't bad. Really.
Going rate for spending $15 million to – and even less on the Pixar stuff because – they can just re-render that. They don't They don't have to go through the expensive, you know, computer process of converting it, like the Star Wars movies or something like that. But part of I think the thing that Monsters Inc. is going to be suffering from just in its run is they did a Blu-ray release a couple years ago.
That's true.
So it's not like it's even really coming out of the Disney vault again, although it kind of is. So they're just trying to get through all the big releases.
Yep.
So. And the only really other thing of note, because everything else kind of fell down, what you'd expect going down the list of the top 10. I don't even think that even made it into the top 10.
Hmm.
I wasn't expecting it to. I think they were hoping for a little bit more, but.
And how do you say that? Because that's French too.
Cirque du Soleil. No, that's not how. Cirque du Soleil. That's easy to say. Les Miserables. Sort of like I'm a Wookiee when I said it's like Les Miserables.
Today is so much fun. I'm enjoying today's show.
That was my Wookiee noise. But Zero Dark Thirty, at least last weekend, and of course you got all the Christmas, because that's a Christmas movie. You have all the Christmas numbers that we're not going to really worry about right now. But just for that weekend, it did extremely well in just five locations, paid over $400,000.
That's pretty good.
Which is extremely well per location. Almost as well as like an Adam Sandler movie. So, but we'll talk about Zero Dark Thirty in a couple weeks when it comes into a wide nationwide expansion.
Right.
Sort of, you know, there's sort of that in crowd of film critics are like, oh, I saw Zero Dark Thirty and I'm going to talk about this and torture this and blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, no one's seen it.
No, and nobody can see it. So you might as well talk about it when people can see it.
Yeah, that's my philosophy.
Exactly.
So let's talk about movies that you can see if you really want to. But before we do that, you're listening to the Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. How to get a hold of us, you can email us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We do have a voicemail, I believe. It's from a real person and not a creditor, but I haven't checked the voicemail because I'm lazy.
Well.
But call again and maybe we'll talk about it next week. There's also fatguysatthemovies.com, and you can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM. And you can get me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Kristen.
And KDK Reviews. Or you can find me at nightsandweekends.com or realdiscovery.org.
That is right. Now let's talk about a movie that people are flocking to in droves. Parental guidance. Billy Crystal.
I'm sorry, what was that?
What? Billy Crystal and Bette Midler play grandparents whose old school parental techniques are put to the test with their grandchildren.
We need someone to watch the kids, so I was wondering, would you want to?
We'd love to!
I'm not going.
You're going.
That's what I meant.
We practically never see our grandchildren.
Her whole way of raising her kids is a giant in our face.
It's her generation. It's just their way.
They're here!
Grandpa tells lots of jokes that you won't get. Just laugh.
Hello, boys. Still single?
There's a way that we talk to our kids. Or you would say, quit your whining, you're giving me a headache. We would say, use your words.
We have a confession here.
We do?
We didn't see this movie.
No.
Even though it's been out in the theaters, we just neglected to go to it. And here's why. This movie, generally, there is a rule of thumb that if a studio does not screen a movie for press, they are not expecting good reviews.
Right.
This was released by Fox. Now, Fox is kind of notorious for not screening down in our location.
Although it did screen, we just weren't invited.
And that's the zigger. They actually had screenings of this that we could go
to. A couple of them even.
Yeah, and they just opted to not invite press. Mm-hmm. Which means this movie's got to be awful. If they're not even, they screened The Guilt Trip for us. Not Fox, but Paramount did.
Right.
But, you know, and more power to them. But nope, not parental guidance. This is like the first one, and they screened, Fox like screened Life of Pi. You know, they screened some movies here. They screened Hitchcock. You know, they had Fox Searchlight. They showed Hitchcock. Not parental guidance.
Yeah, that's never a good sign.
With that said, what are your thoughts on what it's like? We're going to review this without having seen it because that's what the studio
Well,
wants.
That's fun. Let's do that.
Yes. What do you think?
I'm intrigued by the topic, I suppose, because as a parent of a new child.
Yes.
And I have a vacation coming up mm-hmm. in the not-too-distant future, and we'll be leaving the baby home with my parents.
Ooh, okay.
So, and it's one of those things that whenever my parents come over and my mom tries to do something, I'm like, no, that's not how you do it now. Mm. You know, because everything changes.
But
like
your parents are
years.
Adorable with the guy. I've seen your parents with the baby, and they're adorable.
They are.
Especially your dad, who's a man's man.
He you know, is, but he adores her.
And he's like Clint Eastwood, and then he just holds. It's very cute.
Yeah,
it's very cute.
Yeah.
And your mom's a mom, so.
And she's crazy. Hi, Mom.
Yeah. She doesn't listen, does
no.
she? No. We can say whatever we want to about our parents.
My mom's nuts.
They don't listen to this show. Yeah. This is my problem with the premise. I get the premise that it's the whole thing is that parents are all, you know, anal retentive and crazy, and we need to have this and obsessive and that sort of thing, and the parents of our generation were just whatever, you know, lay down the law and this and that and the other. Because mm-hmm. Marissa Tomei and Tom Everett Scott, I think, are the people who play the actual parents.
Okay.
They're pretty much our age. They're a little bit old. You're a little bit younger than me, but they're mm-hmm. maybe just a hair older than me. So I'm in that generation. I hate to tell you people, the 70s and 80s, the parents who were raising kids in the 70s and 80s, that was the heyday of crazy, touchy-feely parenting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even more so than it is today. So while not all the parents did that back then, there were a lot. And this feels like a premise that was made in the 80s, where the parents yeah. are, well, you don't yell at a kid and you don't spank a kid and you don't say this and you don't do that. And then talking to the kids that raised the parents that raised kids in the 50s that are like, spare the rod, spoil the child, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it's just almost like this thing's like 30 years removed from where it actually needs to take place.
Billy Crystal was actually originally going to be in it when it was, you know.
Oh, yeah. He was the younger guy?
Yeah.
That's very possible. Anyways, this movie gets a preemptive suck or contractually obligated.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And we're not even going to bother with this again. So, parental guidance. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Django Unchained and Les Miserables.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Christian Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
That's me!
Hello! We just finished talking about a movie that we didn't see.
Yes.
And have no intention of seeing.
Stubbornly didn't see.
Yes, we refused to see it.
Take that, Fox!
Yeah, parental guidance.
When those terrible box office numbers roll in, that's our doing. That's what you get for not screening a movie. I'm pretty sure we would have.
Well, because,
that.
You know, we have been called
the most influential voices in film.
It's true.
That's right.
So, because we are so influential, no one will see it.
Boom.
Take that, Fox.
You know, I did hear something funny about this. I do an in-person radio spot on a station in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And the DJ there was telling me that apparently Billy Crystal, there's this town in New Jersey area or somewhere like that was just like wiped off the map by the hurricane, the superstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's still dealing with a lot of stuff from that because that happened only a couple months ago.
Yep.
So Billy Crystal like rented out a theater and played Parental Guidance all the houses in the place and,
really?
And brought them in and let everybody see the movie for free and
did
have
anybody
snacks.
Show up?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, like, haven't they suffered enough? It's like, and then we were joking, me and the guy, we were talking, like, are they going to have, like, on the comment cards, I go, bad enough, I lost my house. I had to sit through this movie?
Thanks for the free popcorn. Yeah. I stayed in the lobby.
Anyways, we're going to talk about a movie we have seen, and by this time, you know, maybe you have as well. And that would be Django Unchained. Jamie Foxx plays a former slave turned bounty hunter who tries to free his wife from a plantation owner.
Do you know what a bounty hunter is? You kill people, and they give you a reward.
Better they are, bigger the reward.
I need your help. I'm looking for the Brittle Brothers. However, I don't know what they look like, but you do. Don't you?
Once a final Brittle Brother lies dead in the dust, I agree to give you your freedom. And I'll take you to rescue your wife.
So.
Yes.
Kristen.
Kevin.
What'd you think?
You know, in the beginning, I loved it.
Okay.
Loved it in the beginning. In fact, for the first half, at least, I was sitting there in the theater thinking, this is the greatest movie of the year.
Yeah.
This is awesome. And then it kind of fell apart for me.
Really?
Yep. In the end, completely fell apart. If they had cut
was
it
when
off,
they went to go... Because there is a definitive halfway point.
There is a point where you think this movie is now going to end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It goes on for probably another half hour.
Okay. And more.
Yeah. And it goes into some very random territory.
Mm-hmm.
That just felt a little unnecessary for me. And with that, when you end that way, it kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Okay.
So for me, I really liked the beginning, loved it, really didn't like the end.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I there's actually two points in the movie. Because the whole thing is him, Jamie Foxx's character Django, being freed as a slave and becomes a bounty hunter to help out the guy played by Christoph Waltz. And then there's a point where then they decide, we're going after your wife.
Yes.
And that, to
and
me,
that's
was
a completely different movie.
Total different breaking point.
Yes.
You know, and it does suffer from that
it's
thing
a
that
Quentin
Australia...
Tarantino movie. It's kind of a rambly movie that kind of goes in all kinds of directions.
Yeah.
Which is what Quentin Tarantino does.
Yeah.
And it's fun, usually.
But even extent. Then, there's another part later on where it seems... Is that
yes.
what you're talking about when
yes,
it kind of
that's
wrap
what
up?
I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens. And it does feature... Probably one of the absolute worst director cameos
oh,
ever
terrible.
Committed to film.
It is terrible.
It's Quentin Tarantino, and it's he. I don't.
Is
I mean,
he supposed to be Australian?
I think he's supposed to be in that.
An Australian cowboy.
He's awful in it,
and it's terrible.
He can't do the accent. And it's like if you saw Pulp Fiction, and when I saw his name in the credits of Pulp Fiction way back when I saw that, I was like, oh, the director's in it. I'm like, well, he fit for the role.
Yeah.
That he played in
yes.
Pulp Fiction, but you know, there's. This guy may have peaked as an actor when he was playing Elvis on The Golden Girls.
Nice.
So, with no lines. But, no, Quentin Tarantino was terrible in this movie. Here's the thing, though. It's very violent. It's very brutal. But, you know, any of the... And it does get very rambly
yes.
at times. It's an homage mm-hmm. to spaghetti westerns and blaxploitation, kind of mm-hmm. all put into blender, you know, shaken up. And any criticisms that I had of the film... be it editing or pacing or dialogue or characters or that sort of thing, are all forgivable in that context because it is that homage to these crazy movies
mm-hmm.
that all have these severe problems.
Yeah.
It's a grindhouse film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it goes back to when he made Grindhouse, and that's what, you know, that's what Kill Bill was. I actually liked this better than Inglourious Basterds, and here's why. I thought it was more evenly edited. It has these long talky moments, but they just don't seem to go on so long that it becomes tedious for me.
I guess for me, the long talky moments before, they fit.
I think so.
And this one, not quite as much. Again, in the beginning, totally fit for me.
Yeah.
But it just kind of fell apart in the end.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, there's a great mix of, you know, the action and the drama and all the conversations.
And humor. There's a lot of funny moments.
Oh, yeah.
Lots.
Yeah.
So. There, I also love the actors in it. I loved...
It could not be any better.
Now, Christoph Waltz basically plays the same character he does in Inglourious Basterds, only he's not a Nazi.
Right.
He's a nice guy.
He's a dentist.
He's still the same guy.
And he is so funny. Seriously, this is the role that this man was born to play.
Absolutely.
He is so good.
And he's good. And Jamie Foxx is good. But I mean, he's
the polar opposite.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a really sweet, kind-hearted guy who, you know, is really thoughtful. And Christoph Waltz, he likes to go in there and mess with people.
Yeah. And you've got Leonardo DiCaprio, who's really good in it.
He is.
You've got Samuel L. Jackson, who's really good in it.
Yeah, it's okay.
He kind of plays the stock Samuel L. Jackson, even though he's a slave. But there's also some of the best cameos you're ever going to see, because that's one, you know, you've got... Not even cameos, but bit parts. You had Don Johnson as like the racist Colonel Sanders plantation owner.
Yeah.
And you had, did you know Lee Horsley plays the sheriff in one of the when they come to that small town?
Oh, yeah.
Matt Houston. That's so cool. So you have all those things showing
Franco Nero.
Yeah. Yeah. Tons of great cameos. And that's one of the things I loved about it, because it was just, when Quentin Tarantino says, I just want to have fun. That's when I like his movies. When he's trying to make a point and trying to be clever is when I get a little bit tired.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I still enjoyed it. I give it a rocks.
I give it kind of rocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that's interesting with it is you should go to Film School Rejects, because I wrote an article and it should be up by now. It's the look at 2012 cinematic facial hair.
Nice.
This was one of the movies. And then we had this big wash of movies that had fantastic facial hair with
The
Hobbit.
There was some crazy facial hair this year.
You had Django, you had Hobbit, you had Lincoln, you had Les Miserables with nice. Hugh Jackman's enormous beard in there. But I started writing this article, and I could go back all the way to The Gray and, you know, Hunger Games. You had some So you should go check that out, because it looks at all the different types of facial hair.
Yes.
And I have now... I'm working on my Christoph Waltz mustache.
Yeah, your facial hair is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm twirling it.
It just keeps going.
Like an evil man.
I don't think you can hear that.
Yeah, you can.
In the microphone. Really?
Yeah. Magic of radio.
Okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Gosh, we only have about a minute left. We can let this spill over in the next one. But let's talk real quick. What would you say was your favorite cinematic moment of 2012?
You know, for me, cinematic moments are the experience.
Yes.
So the screenings that we go to. For me, always...
Not at Red Dawn.
No. The best moment for me is the first screening of the summer blockbuster season.
Okay.
So this year it was the Avengers. And that is, it's so exciting. Everybody's all excited to get there. And you know, you've got this big movie and the
whole... You have like weathermen from the TV station who never review movies who show up and get good seats.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So everybody shows up. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a big film critic party, really.
It is. I'd say one of mine is Avengers making $200 million opening weekend, so that kind of ties into that.
Yep.
That was a big deal this year. Anyways, we better go to a break. When we come back, what are we going to talk about? Box office?
Yes, and what else?
Les Miserables!
There you go. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
That's right.
Yes, we were just talking about a few of our favorite cinematic moments of 2012, as well as Django Unchained.
Yeehaw.
The D is silent.
I don't know if that's a yeehaw kind of movie, but okay.
Not really. Yeah. I guess it is a little bit.
I like the way you die.
Nice.
Bang, bang.
Okay, so moving right along.
Okay.
I'm going to let you say the name of this movie because it's just fun.
It's Les Miserables.
Okay, and in this musical adaptation of Victor Hugo's epic novel, Hugh Jackman stars as a paroled prisoner who sets out to turn his life around during the French Revolution.
had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed. Oh, life has killed a dream I dream.
Huge Jackman.
Huge Jackman.
I always call him Huge Jackman.
Really?
Because, well, if I ever met him in person, I probably would. What's up, Huge?
I bet you would.
He'd take it. He's
he seems
really
to have a pretty good sense of humor about things in general.
Yes, he does.
So what did you think about this one?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not a big fan of – I was never a big fan of the play. I never saw the play on Broadway and heard bits and pieces of the soundtrack. I remember when it was huge. I mean, it was like Phantom Part 2. You know, it was the one that was – it was like Cats was huge, then Phantom was huge. And then I guess it was Les Mis that was the next big – big Broadway thing. And I, like, my mom has seen it, my sister's seen it, and I never saw it.
I never did either.
Okay.
So there you go.
So I thought it was well made.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're a fan of the movie, you have, or a fan of the production, you kind of have to divorce yourself from the people who played it.
Okay.
The characters the actors you're used to hear sing or act.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just take who's on screen. Because there's good and there's bad. I mean, Hugh Jackman does an okay job.
Huge is good.
And Anne Hathaway is fantastic.
Brilliant.
Yes. Well done. But then you got like Amanda Seyfried, who she sort of has this warbly voice through everything, which she doesn't have normally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Russell Crowe, he gets an A for effort.
Russell, yes. That is exactly what I said in my review. Poor Russell Crowe. He tries so hard.
My wife said, she goes, he's like the Pierce Brosnan of this movie for like Les Mis.
Yes.
Not Les Mis, Mamma Mia.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and you could tell it's his voice.
He's not as bad as Pierce Brosnan, at least.
He's trying his butt cheeks off to sing, but
oh, yeah, he tries so hard.
Yeah, and it's not
poor Russell Crowe.
Yeah. But, I mean, he throws down for it, so I give him a pass.
And that was one of the things for my husband, too, because he saw the production in Toronto.
Okay.
And he talked about the music, too, that, you know, when you see it on stage, it's just this booming music, and it's big, and the sound is huge. And it's not quite that way in the movie.
Well, and I think also by the way Tom Hooper directs it, he directs it very intimately.
Yes.
He uses a lot of very, you know, short lenses and close-up shots.
Right.
And it's very claustrophobic at times, which I personally didn't like, but I know why he's doing
that. I liked the way he did it.
You like that?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the music for me didn't always work. There were a few times when I was like, it would be nice to know what they're singing about right now.
Well, I think part of that is when you go to see a Broadway show, you get the playbill, and it says what happens in each act and what everything's supposed to be. You're given a cheat sheet through this whole thing, and you don't get that in the movie. So that's the biggest leap you got to get from stage to screen, and that in running time as well, because this does run 2 hours and 45 minutes.
It is pretty long, and there is no intermission.
No. On the screener I got, there was.
Yes, that's true. We had an intermission on ours, too.
Yeah, it was
we got
on
to
two
stop
discs.
And get more snacks. It was, you know, fill up on our drinks. Yeah. It's not bad.
There's like good and bad with like Helena Bonham Carter and Sacha Baron Cohen, because they're very funny as the innkeepers.
Oh, yes.
And they kind of steal the show at times. But I've heard people complain about Helena Bonham Carter being basically, this is just Sweeney Todd for her all over again.
I'm okay with that.
Oddly enough, though, I don't think that's not why she got the role. She got the role because she was in The King's Speech, I believe.
Okay.
She was in The King's Speech with Tom Hooper, and so I think he probably was like, I'm going to use her, too. And
she can pull it off.
Yeah.
She's perfect for that role, I think. And Sacha Baron Cohen, he was in Sweeney Todd, too, and he was hilarious there, and he's hilarious here. And he can sing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, really, the movie was perfectly cast.
I thought it was very
well. Other than Russell Crowe.
So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that the fans of the movie, I think, are going to love it. Fans of the stage play are going to love it.
Yeah,
If they can get past the cast.
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, this was one of those things that I needed a minute when it ended to just compose myself again.
Really?
Yeah, it's one of those movies that just kind of hits you in the end, and it's just that powerful.
Hmm. Who thought prostitutes had such a tough time in turn of the century?
You didn't think?
Early 1800s.
You didn't think?
France.
Hmm.
I always thought it was like just a fun time. I thought it was like
Moulin Rouge.
Disneyland for prostitutes.
Yeah.
That was French Revolution. That's where you
Who
wanted
knew?
To go if you're a prostitute. They take your teeth? I mean, it's amazing. What's going on? Even like the aristocrats are all filthy. Look, did you see that? I mean, they were all dirty. Everyone was dirty in this movie.
Well, you know.
This movie needed a shower. Those are not criticisms. Those are just observations
I've
had.
Just the way it is. Yeah. It was the French Revolution. It was a stinky time.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that I give this movie a kind of rocks just because I didn't love it, but I thought it was good.
I say it rocks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that.
Thank you.
Could have had more bounty hunting in it.
Nice.
They could have had, like, you know, can you hear the people sing? I like the way you die. Pew! Then beat somebody with a bullwhip.
Okay.
That's from Django Unchained, by the way. That wasn't me just throwing down what I like to see in movies. Because I'm not that weird.
You are a little bit.
All right. So let's move on to the box office. What do you think? What do you think's going to win this like 6-day weekend? For I mean, taking into account whatever it makes on Christmas Day and what it's made so far, and what's going this weekend?
I'm going to give it to Les Mis.
I kind of agree. I think Les Mis. If you talk, it's so hard to say because it's unfair to say from when it starts on Christmas because that's its opening day and it's Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And The Hobbit, which is the next closest competition, has kind of already kind of run a bit of its course.
Right.
And even though people you want to go see it on Christmas, it wasn't in the same numbers
mm-hmm.
as the other films. I think Django is going to have a decent run, but it's going to be just – it's going to do like
– it's still a tough sell.
It's like what The Dragon Tattoo was last year.
Right.
Violent, R-rated movie, not exactly – the most wonderful time of the year material.
Oh, but they always come out this time of the year.
I never get that.
Christmas is when we have, you know, all of the violence and the Nazis. And that's, you know, when I think of Christmas, I think Nazis.
You should.
Yeah.
That's what Hollywood's saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you love Christmas, you love Nazis.
It's always
brought to you by
death
Hollywood.
And depression and Nazis.
They had, like, The Reader come out that one year.
That's always when it comes out.
Yeah. If it's Christmas... it's got to be Nazis.
And musicals.
All right, what do you think Les Mis is going to take? Just you know what? This is my end-of-the-year gift to you, Kirsten. I don't think we need to come up with numbers because I don't I don't even know how to start.
Okay, I don't know either. I've got some scribbled down, but I don't even want to say them because I don't even know what it counts as.
Les Mis is going to make $500 million kajillion dollars.
Awesome.
There you go.
And one.
You're going one?
Yes.
I'm going to win because it's less. Gotcha. Zing. Trap was set. Snare. Right there. All right. We got a little bit of time for one more extra, you know, at least one more favorite cinematic moment of 2012. I'm gonna put in there, I'm going to say this thing is, we finally saw the end of the Twilight saga.
Yes.
Thank God. Thank all that is
holy. Or that's what you think.
Yeah, they're going to remake
it. Rumors that there are more coming.
Anyways, at least as we know it. Twilight Saga,
one?
As you know. You can have
one.
Yes.
I have the Circus Afro song from Madagascar 3.
Ooh. Circus. Afro Circus. Afro Circus. Afro. Polka dot. Polka dot. Polka dot. Afro.
Thank you.
You better write that royalty check to Paramount for that. Yes, that was a great moment. When we saw the movie, I saw it with my son, and they gave us circus noses. They gave us red noses, and we put them on. Since it was summertime, we rolled the windows down, and we stuck our heads out the windows. We're driving on the freeway coming home, screaming Circus Afro at the top of our lungs.
They handed out the wigs at the end of the screening, too, but I didn't get one. And I thought, you know, they were handing them out to all the little kids. I was like, you know, the last thing we need is for a pregnant woman to come in here and beat up a small child for this wig. But, you know, I was pregnant and hormones.
You should have kicked the 6-year-old in the knees and stole their wig. Give me that!
I really wanted
one. I'm pregnant. Because that's how you talk
and
all the time.
And that's totally how I sounded, too.
All right. On that note, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about DVDs. At Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We've been talking about a bunch of movies. We've been talking about Django Unchained.
Django.
And Les Mis. And also, what is that other one? That parental guidance that
whatever.
Who cares? Take that, Billy Crystal. You and your old Oscar hosting duties. I don't know why I'm suddenly just dumping on Billy Crystal.
Why are you so angry today?
What is it about Billy Crystal?
I don't know. You should be in the Christmas spirit yet.
I haven't even gone after Bette Midler.
It's true.
I could go after Bette Midler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Marissa Tomei. She's not naked in that movie. I'm not seeing it. No.
Oh, boy.
You know, that irritates me. I'm just going to get
when
on my
Marissa Tomei isn't naked in movies?
Well, here's the thing. Marissa Tomei, for the time when you'd say she was in her prime, you know, when she was in her, my cousin Vinny.
Okay.
That age. She was gorgeous, and she was just looked great, but she didn't do any nude scenes. Turns 40, and suddenly she's naked in every movie. She's in, Disney movies naked. She walks up. It's, in the middle of Cars 2. She's like, hi, I'm Oscar winner Marissa Tomei. And then that mater going, where's your clothes, you big stupid idiot?
Nice.
I don't know what is happening.
So anyway.
It's very warm here in the magical studio in the sky. I think I'm having a stroke.
I think that's probably what happens. Because by the end of the show, you just fall apart. I don't know.
It made me all that cough syrup I took before we started.
And the cough syrup.
There we go. Just blame it on the
cough
syrup.
And the cough syrup.
It's just me getting in the mood for Smurfs 2 coming out next year.
Oh,
I've been smurfing my cough syrup.
Nice.
Thus, us in the know, in the Breaking Bad in the know, we know what smurfing means.
I could use some cough syrup.
To deal with me for the last 10 minutes, right? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. What time is it now? What are we doing next?
It is time for our DVD Roundup.
That's right. Here's the deal, people.
There's nothing to talk about.
Nothing came out. Why? Because
we just wanted to make the sound effect. Really, there's nothing to talk about.
That's right. Because Christmas fell on a Tuesday this year. And that's when DVDs normally come out. Guess what? There are some places that are open on Christmas, like Chinese restaurants and gas stations.
McDonald's.
Yeah, McDonald's. But
that's where we had our Christmas dinner.
Yeah, Best Buy and Target are not open on Christmas.
Not so much.
Day. So no one's buying DVD because they're getting DVDs in the morning. So
yes.
Yeah, Christmas fell on a Tuesday. So the only things that they had the stones to put out the words on DVD and Blu-ray.
Which, people were rushing out to pick it up.
They didn't even do an Oscar push for this film.
And really, why would they?
The only thing I got, there's a song. The song that was written for the movie.
Really?
I actually got solicited for your consideration information on that. But just the song.
Okay.
They're like, we know the movies.
We know the movie's bad.
It's absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But the song.
This is a great song.
Check this out.
Okay.
There's also The Room on Blu-ray. Apparently hit Blu-ray this week as well.
How long has that movie been out?
Are you familiar with The Room?
I am familiar with it. I have not seen it.
Oh, you need to see it. Oh, you need to see
it. I know
it
they
now.
Play it once a month out here.
You don't need to see it there.
No.
Because you well, just need
now
to
that
see
it's on
it.
Blu-ray.
It's on Blu-ray. You should see it.
More reliable.
For those of you who don't know what The Room is, The Room is this movie that was made in the early to mid-90s by this guy who got it financed with the Russian mob.
Nice.
And it is probably one of the most incompetently made yet cohesive films ever produced. It's one of those modern, terrible masterpieces. And it's got, storylines that show up and stop. It's got these weird blue screen scenes that are, on a rooftop.
Awesome.
I mean, it's not like they're on Mars. They're just, it's weird. And it makes no sense. It's totally something you need to see because it is just so wackety-schmackety, off-the-wall bizarre.
Nice. How many drinks do you need before you have it?
A lot.
Okay.
You know how they say liquor before beer, you're in the clear, beer before liquor? Never been sicker?
Yes.
Just liquor through the whole thing. Forget the beer. Just go straight for the liquor.
Straight to the vodka.
Straight to the spirits. So those are the movies that are out. They're also, ironically, those are also both the stinkers of the
nice.
Movie. Because there's nothing else out. I think Brooke Burke has a workout video that came out. Who knows?
That is our pick of the week.
That is it. So anyways, that's it on Blu-rays. And since you're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer, we're going to continue talking about some stuff that we liked from 2012. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Was your favorite cinematic moments of 2012?
I don't know. I'll think about it for a minute.
I'm going to throw out one, and I'm going to say The Return of 007.
Oh, yeah.
Got to bring back James
That's
Bond.
True.
The fact they got through bankruptcy, which is not the first time that the whole rights issue has stalled the franchise.
Yes, it was a big mess, though.
It was a big mess in the early 90s, and then they came back in 95 and did GoldenEye with Pierce Brosnan. And now they got mired in the bankruptcy of MGM,
mm-hmm.
and now they're back. And they're back for good, at least until the next bankruptcy happens.
Nice.
And it's great to see James Bond back. It's great to see him kind of setting the franchise back into the mold of what it was.
And Skyfall was an incredible movie.
Yes, and it's going to be a billion-dollar movie. Very excited for more James Bond.
Yes.
Do you have another one that you want to mention?
I don't know. You kind of stole my thunder on that one.
I've got a great cinematic moment.
Okay, what's your moment?
It was bringing on Kristen Dreyer Kramer as the guest host of Fat Guys of the Movies.
Aww. That's so sweet.
No, it's good. We've been doing this for a couple months now.
Yeah.
Regular. We haven't wanted to kill each other.
No, not at all.
No, she still is okay with me in the magical studio in the sky. She hasn't complained about the smell.
No. Nope.
I had to stop eating Indian food. So...
You eat the Indian food after you leave.
That's I do.
That's okay.
Yeah, that happens.
And I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So, you know, something else. I don't know if this is a good cinematic moment, but it actually happened.
Okay.
Channing Tatum became a movie star this year.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
What the? I mean, because he did, like, The Vow, and he was in Haywire, and then he did 21 Jump Street.
21 Jump Street, which was awesome.
Yeah. And
how
then
good
he
was he in that movie?
Like, Magic Mike, and I'm like, whoa, hold on, slow down, Hollywood. This guy's not that good. He's funny as a comedic actor.
He is.
He's
very hilarious.
Good, not as a dramatic actor, no.
No, not so much.
Never as a dramatic actor. But they actually moved that G.I. Joe movie to 2013, because they wanted to give him more screen time because he did so well in 2012 in the box office.
And he's taking some time off.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's taking time off of acting. Well, he's taking some time off of being in movies.
Yeah. Isn't he working on some producing and stuff like that?
I don't know.
And, you know, he's having a baby.
Well, not him himself. He's got a little bit of help there.
He has some part in it.
You're aware of this process, aren't you?
I've heard about it.
One other thing I want to mention is the Star Wars sale, the sale of Star Wars.
That was a big thing.
To Disney.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I have high hopes. I have very high hopes.
I do too.
That.
I do.
I like what how they're handling the Marvel franchise right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they've done a great job with it. I mean, the Avengers.
Yeah.
If the Avengers is any indication of where Star Wars is going, I'm in.
Yep, definitely. And then the other thing I want to say, kind of a big milestone in 2012, for better or for worse, 48 frames per second. Which
yes.
is The Hobbit. We talked a little bit about it. We're not going to dwell on it. But apparently James Cameron says he wants to shoot Avatar in 60 frames a second. Avatar 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, something that James Cameron would do.
That's kind of like...
And why not?
That's kind of like Avatar 2 and 3 and part of 4 all in one movie.
It's true.
That many frames. So, what are you looking forward to in 2013?
You know, I've been looking at this.
Okay.
And ever since we got this question...
Yes.
It was sent to us about 3 months ago.
Yes.
By Red State Gabe.
Yes, Red State. Thank you, Red State Gabe.
Hi, Gabe. And I've been thinking about it and looking at the stuff that's coming out. Next year is a big year for sequels.
That is true.
Huge. Let's see. What do we have? I have them on my list.
Oh, my gosh.
We have Star Trek.
Star Trek Dos.
The Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
Yes.
We have Monsters University, which is a prequel.
Prequel? It counts.
Despicable Me 2, Kick-Ass 2, Red 2, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, and A Sin City.
That's right.
So we have all kinds of sequels coming out next
year. I want to make a movie. You might be able to help me with this, Chris.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You can help me write a script. I want to make a movie. It's just going to be called 2. So that when they make a sequel, what are they going to call it?
2-2.
2 Part 2.
Yes.
Or 2 the
part
second story.
Deux.
Part Glil. Les Miserables, part blah. Are you particularly looking forward to any of those sequels?
A few of them.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to Star Trek.
Yes.
That's going to be awesome. You know, I might even get dressed up this time.
Really?
Sure.
All right.
I'll do it.
Wait, are you talking about dress up as a character or just actually put on nice clothes?
No, as a character. I'll do the uniform.
Show up in an evening gown.
Yeah. Like, I told a friend last time because it was my first Star Trek movie when I saw the last one. So I've gone nuts since then. But I said,
will be doing...
after seeing that, I will dress up for the next one.
I predict there might be a movie marathon with me and my kids. We're going to watch all the... We're going to do a Star Trek... We're going to do a Trek-a-thon.
I might have to pop in for that one.
And we're going to do a Ape-a-thon. Do a Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
Before that comes out.
Okay.
Anyways, the thing... I am also looking forward to Anchorman 2. You missed that one
on
the list.
Yep.
And I'm also the one of the weird people who's looking forward to Star Wars Episode 2 and 3 in 3D, as well as Jurassic Park in 3D coming up.
I'm really looking forward to The Hunger Games.
Yeah?
I am. I love the first one. And we saw a trailer the other night for World War Z.
Cool.
And that looks pretty interesting too, so I'm in.
Excellent. We got to go. Parental Guidance, Preemptive Suck, Django Unchained, Rocked and Kinda Rocks, and Les Mis, Rocked and Kinda Rocks. Talk to you guys next year.